smartest man alive!
You're gonna die, clown!
And that's what I call a cloudy A2O.
I'm Scuba Sam, Scuba Steve's father.
We eat the pig and then together we burn!
Well, I have a microphone and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Billy Gilmore Podcast, the podcast for the Adam Sandler superfan, the show for the fan of the Sandman. I am your host, Wilson Smith, and joining me remotely, as always...
Hi, this is Chris Giles.
And Austin Culp.
Thank you so much for joining. Quick clarification for what I just said. We're not always recording remotely. We're always recording. We're doing this these shows remotely, but we're so happy to be able to keep doing this. I'm so happy that you are listening to us. Hope everyone is out there safe, staying safe and indoors and healthy. Let's just dive right in. Let's talk some Sandman. Tonight, of course, we're going to be discussing Adam Sandler's first 2011 film, the first of two movies that he put out in the year 2011, both directed by Dennis Dugan, who we just saw with Grown Ups, his, a Sandler stalwart, Happy Madison stalwart. And this one is Just Go With It, his rom-com starring him and Jennifer Aniston and Brooklyn Decker, among others. But before we get into that, of course, we always want to mention... any news items for Sandler, anything that he's doing in the public eye. And lately, as it turns out, there's been a few things weirdly, in quarantine, there's been some Sandler fans, unexpected Sandler fans maybe coming out of the woodwork. You've got Sandler himself popping his head up in interesting places. First off that I can think of was the singer Ariana Grande. Has been tweeting, I guess in her self-isolation, she has tweeted, I think there's two of them, right? Two tweets where she did videos where she's just lip-syncing to her favorite scenes from The Waterboy.
Yeah, it's her just dressing up as the characters and just mouthing along verbatim and convincingly too to some key scenes from The Waterboy. It's a wonderful, productive use of her time in quarantine, and she's doing a service for us all.
Yeah,
is this
a TikTok thing? Like, I've seen people doing this, and I assume it has to be some sort of app related thing because it's like it's the real audio from the movie plus, and then it's just basically her, as you said, lip syncing. And she's playing all the roles, it looks like.
She has a guy playing one of the co-eds.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I didn't watch that one then.
And
I'm not a great, I can't really discern the differences between Ariana Grande if she's not all those same people.
Right. Yeah, we're showing our age and our demographic here because I don't actually know all that much about Ariana Grande. I know the name in that way that you do. Everyone was talking about it. And Sandler himself sanctioned these tweets by retweeting them. And he said, Bobby Boucher approves of this message.
I have to imagine his daughters are probably super excited because I know that he did the Taylor Swift songs with them.
And it's so funny too because that movie came out nearly 10 years before his daughters were born, and so it's gotta be this fun. It's probably funny for them and maybe even for him that it's gotta be. I know he's always seemed to have a pretty good head attitude about I make movies for the people that I make them for, they have their fans certainly, they're successful, but it's gotta be gratifying to 22 years after a movie came out, have a major, major worldwide sensation, just paying homage to you. Paying homage to this dumb comedy that Roger Ebert gave it one star and all critics were this is garbage.
And she would have been a tribute to it, but because anyone could have done little videos or memes for, you can do it and all that, but the fact that she's doing like multi-character, like line for line, like you know, multiple minute long tributes to the movie, really like oh she's actually a fan, like this is this took some time for her to do, so you know, respect.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that was great fun. It was great to see every, you know, Sandler fans connecting via social media that way with like these, you know, the sanction of these big celebrities. But there was another, the Sandman actually made an appearance, quote unquote, an appearance on some talk shows. You know, talk shows are sort of adjusting the way that we all are, these late night shows, to this pandemic and social distancing. But Austin, I believe you mentioned before we started recording some stuff that Sandler's been doing with Fallon.
Yeah, he's done at least a couple of appearances on Fallon. Like the first one, which I believe we touched upon during the Grown Ups episode, he basically just talks about what he's been doing in quarantine and does a single song, a quarantine song. And then he came on again just a couple of days ago and did one called Don't Touch Grandma. So... He's at least he's busy writing songs during all this.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love
I think he's doing it with the same. I believe he said he was doing it the same guy that was on the 100% Fresh special.
That guy was a real trooper. We need to learn that guy's name, because that guy was just like, that guy's incredible, sitting there like playing with Sandler the whole time. Oh man. So yeah, I think that's probably, you know, that's a lot of news for these days, considering what other celebrities are doing or not doing, as, you know, as it were. So, it's interesting that, you know, this is the most that he's done post Uncut Gems. So, it's exciting that he's still, helping us all out, making himself seen during, these, troubling times. It's comforting to me, at least.
For sure. Yeah. No, it's nice that he's not only showing up for these silly bits, but he's also, you know, getting the word out for other like-minded silly bits too. It's little things like that that have been a nice breaks from the doom and gloom of normal life right now.
That's right. But you know what? This is for a different podcast, but David Lynch is staying optimistic. And so is the Sandman. And if my two heroes, David Lynch and Adam Sandler, can stay optimistic, then I can too. So I think that's about it for Sandler news. So I think we should just dive in to our discussion of 2011's romantic comedy opus, Just Go With It. As mentioned before, this film was directed by Dennis Dugan. It was written partially by, at least co-written by Alan Loeb, who is like this guy who I'm pretty sure he's like, he was one of those like Hollywood screenwriters who like just had a moment where he was just like, I think he wrote that movie, The Dilemma, which came out like damn near at the same time as this movie.
Woo.
Right. And I think he also, I'm going to check this right now, but I'm pretty sure that he directed, this would be okay. I think he wrote Collateral Beauty, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow.
Let me see. Nope. Oh, wait. Yes, he did. Okay, good. So, so Alan Loeb wrote, Just Go With It, The Dilemma, Here Comes the Boom, Collateral Beauty. So there you go.
He wrote the other Jennifer Aniston movie, the one with Jason Bateman staring into a cup of sperm, The Switch.
The Switch, yes. That's already inspiring confidence in us all. But Just Go With It, an interesting, before we dive into our, like, our talk about the episode, like, you know, the nitty gritty details, this film, it's interesting to note this movie, because it's not really something talked all that much about. It's not a movie. It did very well, but it's not really talked about in Adam Sandler's filmography all that much, either by fans or critics. And I think that it's still an interesting place in his filmography, because this is the last movie he puts out in theaters that is an unqualified success. Like, Just Go With It is basically the end of Sandler's hot streak. You know, he had things that he had, like little tiny detours or speed bumps along the way throughout all of this, but he didn't, like, basically this movie was the last time that, you know, every time he would put out a movie, basically from like 2002 until 2011, you know, critics would decry how lazy it was. There would be, you know, everyone would just be furious about it. But it would always make money, and people would use it as an example of how bankrupt Hollywood was. Mm-hmm. And so Just Go With It is the, I feel like that's the last one that that happens for, because the next one after this does not do well financially. And that sort of continues to happen for basically until he decamps for Netflix. So it's curious, just, you know, there's a little historical value for that reason alone. But also, I think, I don't know, I think we all might have had some surprising reactions to this. So yeah, so Just Go With It. It's actually, so Chris and Austin, we have talked about this movie before, you know, just in our sort of, in our conversations that we have in between recordings. And something that I know that those of us who had seen it before mentioned, we had talked about how, like, well, this is a really good screwball comedy premise. Like, right. there's a lot of potential for this story. And for some reason, until now, I had never actually looked into this. But now I know why we thought that. And the reason we thought that is because this movie is a quasi-remake of Cactus Flower.
Which I first saw this, Just Go With It, like maybe a little over a year ago when we were first brainstorming ideas for the podcast, and I'd never seen it before. I watched it like, oh yeah, no, I actually enjoyed that one despite its reputation. In the time since then, I have seen Cactus Flower. I went through a recent like Goldie Hawn kick, and I was like, oh wow, okay, yeah, that kind of sheds some interesting light on the plot mechanics of Just Go With It, but also just kind of makes the absurdity of this movie all the more hilarious to me, because, you know, it's like of all the random ass things for it to be inspired by, this sort of, you know, this 2-hour Hawaii vacation that Sandler was able to do. Yeah, sure, Cactus Flower, why not? If anyone listening is interested in the original, please do go watch it. It's a charming early vehicle for a Goldie Hawn, and I believe Walter Matthau, right?
Yep. Cactus Flower is itself, that film, which was released in 1969, that film is based on a Broadway stage production written by Abe Burrows. and yeah, the movie has Walter Matthau, Ingrid Bergman, and Goldie Hawn, scored right. by Quincy Jones. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one that, like, it's one that I have not watched, but it's like on the periphery of my, not like I know of it. But yeah, so now we have an actual concrete reason why it's not Alan Loeb, it's Cactus Flower.
Yeah.
But this movie, it's about basically Adam Sandler. We'll just dive right into the plot like we normally do. Adam Sandler, the movie starts on his wedding day. He plays Danny Maccabee of the, you know, the historic, like, you know, he's, it's like Judah Maccabee, the famous Jewish hero. And he, we start off on his wedding day, and his bride is played by none other than Jackie Sandler, member of the Sandler Squad and IRL wife to Adam Sandler. And she is talking with all her bridesmaids. She's talking with her bridesmaids about, how, oh, she can't believe she's getting married. And then the conversation turns to how she doesn't really like Adam Sandler's sister. Adam Sandler's sister is in the room. She has a really big nose, like a comically large nose. Mm-hmm. And she walks out of the room, and Jackie Sandler and her bridesmaids make fun of her for being so annoying. And I only bring that up because it does seem to be setting up a particular dynamic where it's like, oh, Adam Sandler felt bad because she was like making fun of his sister or whatever. This character never appears again. So like, I don't know why, like, it was like, oh, he's like so pretend. I mean, she does also admit that she slept with another man, but like, I don't know why have the sister character in there at all. but you know, that's a nitpick. But so yeah, Sandler overhears Jackie Sandler saying, that she like, oh, well, he's like a cardiologist, so I'm going to marry him. And that zucchini on his face because he also has a gigantic schnoz. And then he goes to a bar to drown his sorrows, and he's wearing his wedding ring that he was going to use in the ceremony, I guess. And who should walk into the bar but Lila Garrity herself, Friday Night Lights' Minka Kelly. It's Lila Garrity, right?
Yeah, Lila Garrity, Minka Kelly. Oh, I did like whenever I first moved here, they were shooting Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
And I was an extra because they paid $65. All you did was sit there and do nothing.
Yep.
And there was one scene where they were going to put me like fake talking to her and then like pull her away. But then they gave it to a more football-y looking jock.
No.
So bummed out. But on with Minka Kelly.
Well, so Minka Kelly, the lovely Minka, walks into this bar, and I will note, because this is how my brain works and it's OCD, Minka Kelly, the same year, the star of The Roommate, along with Leighton Meester, who looks a lot like Minka Kelly. Leighton Meester went on to become the call her the female lead in That's My Boy. So Minka Kelly to Leighton Meester, Adam Sandler, he got all the Roommate co-stars. He never got Billy Zane, but wait, no, he did. Going Overboard. I'm totally wrong. So anyways, Minka Kelly is she walks in this bar and she immediately gets hit on by everybody in there. All these like rude jerks. Jonathan Loughran, Peter Dante. We got some members of the Sandler squad right off the bat. Oh, and of course, we see Nick Swardson as Adam Sandler's cousin, I believe. Is that right? Is cousin or brother?
I thought they were related. I had kind of taken it as his brother, but IMDb lists no last names for them for some reason.
Well, they talk later about their grandpa, so I have to assume that it's like they're either direct siblings or they're cousins. So we do see Nick Swardson, who appears throughout the rest of the film, unlike Peter Dante and Jonathan Loughran. So we got a lot of Sandler squad right off the bat. And Sandler talking to Minka Kelly, she sits down and sees his wedding ring. She thinks he's like going to hit on her and be a jerk like everyone else. She sees his wedding ring and suddenly is softened, and like talking to him, and he realizes like in this moment, like, oh, I can use the fact that I am married, quote unquote, even though he's not, you know, they think that I'm married and I can use that to get women. And it's a little bit how like Hugh Grant figures out in About a Boy that if he pretends to be a single parent, you know, he can get sympathy from women. But so Minka Kelly just swoons for him. And who wouldn't? I mean, with the schnoz like that. but in this scene, we also get, some great product placement. We get Budweiser beer, and we also have, because I'm going deep on the product placement this time, Jonathan Loughran says to Minka Kelly, "You're like a Pop-Tart, hot and sweet." I was like, okay, like, you could have just said you're hot and sweet. I mean, like a pop, that, I don't know. You shoehorn that one in.
Even by Sandler standards, this movie has some pretty shameless product placement, and I can't wait to talk about it more. That's one of my favorite instances of Sandler product placement, about a third to halfway through the movie. And, yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
What? So this beginning portion, is it in the 80s? Like, it's very Wedding Singer vibe.
Yes, he has the same hair as Robbie from Wedding Singer, basically.
And I was a little bit thrown off by this timeline because it jumps from whatever time that is to like 1991, where it almost looks, which we're about to get to, it almost looks modern at times, that 1991. Or I don't know. It's really weird timeline jumping that I didn't understand.
I'll be real, I wasn't really following the whatever subtitles were coming up on screen to tell us where we were. I was just like, yeah, they're in the 80s, I guess. But let's see. So he Sandler realizes this gift that he has, and you know, this technique that he can use, and so he then switches from cardiology to plastic surgery. He tells us this in narration. We see him leaving a we see him at another bar with another woman. Like later on, they're drinking Stella Artois product placement watch, and she let's see. That's the one where like she puts his hand on her boob and like they like he like walks out of the bar with her and leaves a note for her the next morning that says, thanks for not beating me like my wife does. Because that's how he's like buttering them up, is like making it like, oh, like my wife and I don't get along and I'm so sad and I'm just a romantic, but like my marriage is falling apart. Can you like console me? And then he in narration, which the movie only has at the beginning and the end. He says that, you know, he's like, I can't give up the ring technique. He does a Gollum impression, calls it my precious, all that stuff, you know. And then we are in his plastic surgery practice, where Jennifer Aniston works in his office, and she is the delightful Jennifer Aniston. This is their first collaboration together of two so far. And this is basically going to be the focus of this whole episode. So we'll talk more about it, but it's a delight to see her. I think that even when the material isn't serving her, she is just, she's knocking it dead. She's really impressive in this movie.
Yeah, definitely. That's like really the first thing you notice and appreciate in the movie going forward. When Murder Mystery was first announced, I was like, notably stoked, and I remember like even like a few like co-workers being like, oh really, okay, Murder Mystery? Is like, no, he and Aniston are really, really good together. We're like Sandler Barrymore levels of like chemistry here, believe it or not. And I mean, I remember at the time when this was coming out, I mean, like, yeah, you had stuff like The Switch that Aniston was in, just like pretty lame material for her to like just kind of sleepwalk her way through. I mean, occasionally you would get something like Horrible Bosses, which I mean, not really going to bat for that movie, but at least she kind of gets to play a little unhinged in that.
Yeah.
In this one, it's like...
Same year as it.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. But like in this one, you know, it's... She's playing a fairly... Like in the context of this ridiculous movie, she's playing a fairly like grounded, like, you know, down-to-earth a lady, and very much on equal footing with the Sandler character. Like, if not like above him in the sense that he, you know, she's just, you know, like as a comedic act, like actor in this movie, she's very much has like equal material to work with and have fun with.
Totally. So anyway, she's working in his office, plastic surgery office. There's a bit with there's a whole bit with like a delivery guy who's bringing some faulty booby bags. They say booby bags like seven times in the scene. And we get some more product placement because she compares them, and they do look like this. I'll give them that. She compares them to a syrup dispenser at IHOP. delicious IHOP syrup. Sandler and Jennifer Aniston have their first their client, played by returning Sandler Squad member Rachel Dratch, the great Rachel Dratch. She has one eyebrow that is stuck like comically, like she always looks kind of quizzical, like she's giving you like the DreamWorks animated poster face.
I waited for that entire scene. I was waiting for like a Rock, like the Dwayne the Rock Johnson joke, and it just never came.
That would have been great. You're right. I didn't think about that. He keeps misreading her facial expression, her emotions, which is kind of a funny bit. And he and Jennifer Aniston are kind of giggling through this whole scene, like riffing on Rachel Dratch, and that's a clue to how the rest of the movie is going to go, because even in that scene, like I can totally see that being just like dead air in like another Adam Sandler movie. But he and Jennifer Aniston do have this genuinely giddy sort of sense of like back and forth conversation where it's like a delight to hear them. Like they seem like they enjoy each other's company, which is, you know, as we discussed in the Grown Ups episode last week, that goes a long way for these Sandler vehicles. When you can sense the fun they're having. So they're making fun of Rachel Dratch. Nick Swardson shows up and they talk about how he has a penis enlargement. And then that night they go to a party hosted by Sandler Squad returning member Kevin Nealon, And Kevin Nealon has this insane, he's like an insanely surgically worked on man. Like he has like insane plastic surgery. He can barely move his face. We all know the type, like basically the Martin Short character from 30 Rock. Oh wait, is 30 Rock or Kimmy Schmidt? I can't even remember. One of those Tina Fey shows.
I think that would have been Kimmy Schmidt, yeah.
Okay, Kimmy Schmidt, right. So they're at Kevin Nealon's party. Sandler is asked to help Stitch up because he's a doctor. He's asked to give stitches to a kid who fell down because he was distracted by a woman. And when Adam Sandler sees the woman, it is none other than Brooklyn Decker, actress from Grace and Frankie. That's where when I watched this movie with my sister months ago, she was just like, "Oh, it's Grace and Frankie," and I was just like, "What? I've never seen that show."
So at my work, we had her out because she lives in Austin. We had her out like a year ago. And I remember because every time there's a celebrity, there's always paparazzi following, either right. paparazzi or more like the people that are looking to get poster signed. And yeah. I just remember looking out there at the people waiting for her to get out of her car. And there's just a single man holding a Just Go With It poster waiting for her to get out.
Are you sure that wasn't you, Austin?
It wasn't me. I hadn't seen this movie until like earlier this week.
Okay. All right. Good. Yeah. I wish if I had known, I would have been there with my Just Go With It poster. but he and Sandler, she and Sandler sort of hit it off. They hit it off together and they end up walking along the beach. And she mentions how, you know, her parents got divorced. She moved to LA. She's from like South Carolina. And he tells her, like, "I never hang out with girls your age." And she's like, "Oh, no, that's the first lie you told me." So she's, like, pretty perceptive and, like, kind of calling him on his bullshit. And then we cut to – she says here, "I can tell when you're lying and when you're telling the truth." And this is not played like a joke, but in retrospect as to what happens in the movie, the whole movie is a lie to Brooklyn Decker. And so she clearly cannot tell even for a second when he's lying and when he's not. But I don't know. That was just funny to me watching it the second time. I was just like, she's like, "I can tell when you're lying, when you're not." I'm like, "No, actually, like you were exceedingly bad at this. Like if you just randomly chose, you'd probably do better." They, I guess, have sex on the beach and fall asleep on the beach. That's what's implied, is like, it's just like suddenly it's the morning and they're like lying together in the sand. He tells her to get a business card out of his pocket, and she picks up his pants and finds the wedding ring, and he's like, "Oh no." So he says that he has a wife and he's getting divorced, but like, don't worry. And so it turns out that he actually has a special connection with Brooklyn Decker. Now, before we go any further, I will submit that a thing, or maybe the major thing that holds this movie back from being as good as it could have been, is the Brooklyn Decker, this Brooklyn Decker relationship isn't fleshed out enough as a contrast to the Jennifer Aniston relationship. And that's not Brooklyn Decker's fault. She's very good in this movie. She's very game for everything. It's more a script issue, because I don't understand. Not only you kind of understand, because it's the slumming love interest thing, you kind of don't understand what she would see in him other than him being right. like a rich doctor in LA, which would make him extremely rich. But also it's never really made clear, aside from the fact that she seems like a very lovely woman and she's gorgeous to look at, why Adam Sandler is suddenly like, "Oh my God," like there's not that much based on what we see to distinguish her from Minka Kelly. So why is he suddenly like willing to end his, why is he willing to go to such lengths to get her? And I think that, you know, as the movie progresses, that becomes sort of an impediment to buying certain plot, you know, plot contrivances. Cause it's like, well, like, I like they're good together. It's not like, you know, it's not like they don't have chemistry, but the work isn't put in really to make her seem like, "Oh my God, I would completely upend my life for her," other than she is unbelievably gorgeous.
Right. Yeah. No, I was thinking that too when I watched it yesterday for the second time. And like, yeah, I agree. Like, Brooklyn is really good in the movie. And so like the movie succeeds in showing how winsome this character is and how like unbelievably nice and patient she is to put up with all this like nonsense that's thrown at her. But it either fails to establish or really doesn't even try to establish any kind of like deeper connection between her character and Sandler's. And there, and like, there is chemistry there, but I guess just because her character, like the nature of her character is just one sort of plot contrivance and like misunderstanding and lying on top of the other, that it never really gets to feel fleshed out in the way that Sandler and Aniston immediately do. Like, it's like, oh, I get it. Like, they're joking coworkers. I understand who they are with each other. With Brooklyn, it's a little dicier, but as you said, Wilson, it's not really her fault. Actually, she puts on a really good show in this movie, because it could have so easily been a thankless look at this hottie they got to be in this movie performance. It is certainly more than that, thankfully.
Yes, totally. Yeah, based on what this character could have been and maybe was written as, I think that Brooklyn Decker should be commended for doing as much as she does with it.
Yeah, I guess really looking back and thinking about it, yeah, there's just quite a few moments where it's like, for meeting someone like that night and then like having sex that night and then like immediately finding out one lie, and then, as we'll talk about in a second, the kids pop up, another lie, and it's just like all these different kind of lies. It's like, it is a lot of red flags that it's surprising that they didn't make it any sort of like she had an incentive or he had an incentive. It's just,
yeah, it's like they forget about, it's like they forget that they need to like give us that, like that reasoning. And so they kind of just like let the movie coast on. I'm like, well, of course he wants to marry her. I'm like, well, I don't really see it exactly. I mean, I see why he would want to marry her, but not why, like, he would just like, he would be like, oh my God, like, I'm going to change everything for her. But so, back at the office, Jennifer Aniston's children show up, a boy and a girl. And the girl is doing, as she does throughout the entire movie, she does this British accent because she's a wannabe actress. She's honestly pretty funny. Like, I don't really usually like kids in movies, but she is probably more winning than any of the children in Blended, a movie that is damn near like a weird remake of this one. yeah, she's pretty funny. And Aniston's son asks Adam Sandler for money to go on a vacation to Hawaii and swim with dolphins. And Sandler has a line here where he says, rich people don't really give away trips. That's why how they remain rich. I was like, well, unless you're Adam Sandler rich, at which point you can give away trips to all your buds and still remain extremely, extremely rich. They talk about, Jennifer Aniston mentioned sort of out of nowhere that she had this antagonist, this sort of enemy in her college sorority, named Devlin. And she told her kids to say, when they're saying like, take a crap or a poop or a shit, instead of, you know, they say, take a Devlin. Cause she just hated this woman so much. And more on that later. Cause you better believe that comes back. No. So Sandler goes to, Brooklyn Decker's, place of work, which is, a school, Shades of Veronica Vaughn. And Brooklyn Decker, in full view of all these kids, like throws his flowers away and is like, no, I'm not having any of this. Like, I'm not going to be the other woman. And this kid screams at Sandler, calls him a fornicator. Basically Adam Sandler says like, no, like I'm married, but like our relationship is ending. Like, it's no good. And she's like, what's your wife's name? And the first name that comes to mind, he says Devlin, which is important for later. He says, Devlin McAbee is my wife, and like, we hate each other and blah, 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 blah. But she's engaged to be married to a guy named Dolph Lundgren, but not the action star Dolph Lundgren. That's specifically, you know, that's made clear. So he begs Jennifer Aniston to pretend to be his wife. He tells her, like, I could help you, like, I can give you, like, classic surgery or whatever. something that comes up here in this very early part of the movie is Jennifer Aniston in this movie suffers from She's All That syndrome, which is that she's Jennifer Aniston. Okay, so you all know what Jennifer Aniston looks like, but they put her in glasses and if not literally a ponytail, like she's in glasses and a ponytail. She doesn't have paint on her overalls, but it's the same basic thing. And it's crazy, like truly crazy, that Sandler later on is so taken aback by how gorgeous Jennifer Aniston is when she like quote unquote like cleans up, when she like, you know, gets put in like nice shoes and outfits and like a hairstyle or whatever. Like it's just that will never be believable in movies. It wasn't believable when Donna Reed was a librarian in It's a Wonderful Life, like a spinster librarian, and it's not believable in She's All That, and it's not believable in Just Go With It.
It's one of my favorite bullshit tropes that like no one even pretends to accept.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they go shopping for a bunch of things. So she can look the part of his wife. They buy some very expensive shoes. They go to the hairdresser played by Keegan-Michael Key.
Yeah.
And this is about a month after Jordan Peele, his co-star. Jordan Peele was a featured extra in the movie Little Fockers. So this was squarely in the period for them where they were just like showing up in big movies by bigger comedians at that point. But it's, you know, it's kind of funny to see Keegan-Michael Key here, even though even in 2011, I have to assume that what he's doing there is offensive to people. Like weird lisping gay or coded as gay hairdresser. I don't know. It feels like something from a Michael Bay movie, specifically The Rock, where there's the weird lisping hairdresser like character that Bay is clearly making fun of. I don't know. Did that register for either of you? It was like a weird, like, oh man, that's not cool.
It gave me elements of Zohan a little bit, but yeah, like not, but like even more so, like Zohan is just like a action star turned hair stylist. Mm-hmm. And this had a little bit of a not quite right feel to it.
Yeah, it's more, I mean, because it's like Zohan, the joke in Zohan is that he's like hyper-masculine in these certain ways, but he's so into hairdressing. But this Keegan-Michael Key character, it was just like, oh, okay, like that's a, you know, the way that Rob Schneider in other movies played Asians or Hawaiians or whatever. It's like, oh, here's a guy playing like this thing. And it's like, it's maybe not the most respectful portrait or sensitive, for sure. But whatever.
It should go without saying, but I will say it just to be clear. My esteem for Just Go With It has several asterisks on top of it.
Sure. No, that's fair.
And watching it last night with our former guest Randy, who hadn't seen it before, you know, there are some bits of it that she was having fun with it. Really, just the Aniston stuff, and then many times when she's kind of looking over at me like, "What are we watching? And why is this 2 hours long?" And I'm like, "You have to be very forgiving to Just Go With It, to enjoy Just Go With It."
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, you say that like you were gonna like asterisk Lawrence of Arabia or something. Like, now I love Lawrence of Arabia, but I gotta say, I've got some issues. Like, the night scenes don't look great. You know, it's like, okay, it's Just Go With It. Yeah. I hope this makes its way to Dennis Dugan, because he needs to hear how much he's got fans out there. So of course they go to lunch, or they meet for drinks, Brooklyn Decker and Adam Sandler, and Jennifer Aniston shows up, and she's a total like more of a babe than she was previously. She sits down. She and Brooke, you know, she and Sandler sort of have this funny banter where, like, they're sort of, you know, talking shit about one another at the table, like having this funny comedic repartee. Just things like Jennifer Aniston saying, like, oh, well, he's got ED. Somehow Brooklyn Decker doesn't know what ED stands for, which strikes me as odd. Sandler accuses his ex-wife of being a pill addict. They talk about him having IBS and like taking huge shits on the night of their honeymoon. All great stuff. And let's see. Oh, and so right there after their like meeting, like the whole point was for Sandler to like be in the clear, like, okay, like you've met my wife and you know that we hate each other. So like now we're good. And as they're leaving, Aniston takes a call from her kids and reacts to them. And Brooklyn Decker's immediately like, wait, you have children. And I liked that Adam Sandler, his reaction, he's like, we have sort of a little bit of children. And then when she's like, what are their names? And his responses are Kiki D and Bart, which is short for Barto. Now, Kiki D, is that a reference to Kirsten Dunst? Because I've heard people call her Kiki Dunst before. I don't know if that's like a mainstream thing, but I've definitely heard her referred to as that. So Kiki D, I kept thinking like, are they making a joke about this? I can't tell.
I mean, I feel like if it is like, I don't know. Honestly, like I missed that one during the movie. If it is a nickname, it always feels like an ironic nickname. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. So then Austin, or Chris, I think the next scene is, Austin, this was your first time seeing it. So we haven't talked about it previously. So maybe it's all three of our favorite scene. We get the scene where Sandler has to convince, Aniston's children to pretend to be his children.
Yes.
And he, does that by taking them to, lunch at a restaurant, not just any restaurant. He takes them to Pizza Hut. Now, it's a wonderful restaurant. And the way that this scene starts is it is straight up a shot from a Pizza Hut commercial. Like it's a shot of the Pizza Hut logo inside and a employee walking out with pizzas. And the camera kind of like tracks back with her. And then we get Sandler and the kids at like a table eating pizza. It's crazy. Like not since Little Nicky have we seen anything so brazen.
Yeah, it's so shameless. It's so gross that I feel like it almost kind of twists around and becomes brilliant in its own way. Yeah. I remember watching this for the first time last year, and I think I remember texting you, Wilson, like at the moment that scene came up. I was like, "Holy shit! Did you know that they do this? Like, oh, it's amazing! Like you said, it is legit the beginning of a Pizza Hut commercial, and they just go on with it." One thing I kind of like became clear to me as I was watching this again last night, like all of the scenes in this movie, by the way, this takes 45 minutes for them to even finally get to Hawaii. First of all, this movie,
oh, spoiler alert, they go to Hawaii.
Yeah. Sorry. But no, this movie is a no rush to get anywhere. Every scene feels like twice as long as it should be. Every scene feels like you're watching the extended cut of this movie, but nope, this is the theatrical cut. I'll just go with it. And, this movie, begins and ends as essentially a Pizza Hut commercial, and I kind of honestly love it just because it's so go for broke.
It's funny. It's very funny, and like at this point, like it's a little bit like what we were saying during our entire Grown Ups episode about how like things that used to irk you or even like irk people at large, like just have become like, you know, we've been doing a podcast where we're watching every single Adam Sandler movie, and we're avowed fans of the guy's work. And so it's like some combination of like being a fan and Stockholm syndrome and just like understanding what he's about, I guess. But it's like a genuine, like, I almost find it comforting that he just throws in this brazen, like, yeah, I don't know. It's like an explosion in a Michael Bay movie. It's just like, okay, like, yeah, thank you.
and this Pizza Hut scene is, I don't know the last time y'all went and sat in a dining room of a Pizza Hut. Looks absolutely nothing like this. And I'm sure in 2011, it looked nothing like this. Like, it is full. It's, like, completely full of people. And the buffets are going. Everyone's enjoying themselves. For some reason, this is a thing that sticks out to me as being bizarre, is that they all have cans of soda. Whenever we know Pizza Hut is a soda fountain type place. So this is really product placement for Pepsi, because else, like, they are the only ones that have the cans on their table. Everyone else just has a like cup of soda.
You know, if I had been directing this movie and had the same priorities as Dennis Dugan at all, I think I would have been like, well, how about we start the shot on a close-up of the waitress filling up a drink, filling up like a glass or a, like, you know, filling up a cup with Pepsi. We can see Pepsi on the like machine that she's using to fill it up. Because I would get hung up on like what you just said. I would be hung up on the like, well, like, why does no one else have cans? Pepsi, Pizza Hut doesn't serve cans. Like, we got to do it this way. So like, let's do like an extended tracking shot where we go from the beverage place to where she gets the pizza to where she walks it out. And the Pizza Hut rep is just like, whatever, you're here for another 8 hours. Just do what you want. But yeah, so that's fun. He asks the kids to be his fake kids. The girl, like an acting pro, like a regular SAG member, she immediately starts negotiating her rate. And like a good producer, director, creative head, Sandler immediately says, "You'll get paid in experience." I found that very funny, because it do be like that sometimes. The son wants to go to Hawaii and swim with dolphins. He says he won't do it unless that's what they do. He also asked for a pony named Nelson. And Adam Sandler says, what if I give you a PlayStation 3 product placement and we name him Nelson? He tells Jennifer Aniston about this plan to use her kids. And she doesn't like it, of course, because why would she? She also mentions that she's gone on a date. She's going to see this guy who works in another plastic surgery office, this guy named Brian, who has a soul patch. And Sandler does this little riff where he makes fun of the guy's like soul patch. He kind of does like a silly voice, and he's like doing like a thing with his fingers to make a soul patch. And you think this is a throwaway moment, so why am I mentioning it? But it actually plays into the movie a bunch. It's like an important part of the movie. I think it might have happened already, but another thing that keeps playing into the movie is she mentions like, oh, like Jennifer Aniston mentions like my mother said like just be like Cary Grant, like he never exercised a day in his life, he just never took elevators, he just walked up the stairs everywhere. And Sandler does an impersonation of that advice where he's just like, you just always have to take the stairs, but he does the Jill voice from Jack and Jill, like it's 100% him doing that voice. And you guys can probably tell, everyone out there, I'm really excited to get to Jack and Jill. We're so close. We're on the cusp. So that moment registered with me.
This is what you've been training for your whole life.
Absolutely. So they go to a place, Brooklyn Decker et al. They go to J.D. McFunnigan's, which is like a Chuck E. Cheese.
Did any one of y'all grow up with Discovery Zone?
I was just about to say, it's like a DZ Discovery Zone.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's like that. I did look it up. J.D. McFunnigan's is not, alas, a real place. So it's not product like much. If Discovery Zone existed, you have to believe that or something like it would have been the product placement. They would have put something in there. It's weird that they invent a business for the movie, considering all the great businesses out there they could be getting money from. Exactly. They're all walking into the restaurant from the parking lot, and there's a weird bit in slow motion where like this kid throws a drink on his mom, and it's like in like Zack Snyder like slow like extended slow motion, and it's like, oh, okay, like I guess it's just an awful place.
His pregnant mom.
Yes, the pregnant mother. As soon as they go in, this little kid trips and falls and like runs his head into Sandler's crotch and screams about how Sandler touched his pee. He put his face on his pee-pee. Weird joke for a family film.
I didn't catch this in the first viewing, but he's wearing an NYU shirt in this.
Oh, that's right. He is wearing an NYU shirt. Good call. Yeah.
Which is his alma mater, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They go to Sandler chases the girl who's like saying a bunch of crap. She's like improvising a lot. She's improvising a lot and saying things like, oh, like how much she like hates when her dad is with his whore or whatever, referring to Decker. And Sandler chases her into like the like the edifice, whatever you call all those play structures, right, at DZ. Yeah, and he like convinces her to like to go along with his plan, and they hug each other, and then you know, this is all on our minds right now. This kid runs past and sneezes right in Sandler's face, and he's just like, really? Really? And like, you know, I felt that.
Oh, for sure. This whole sequence when they're at McFunnigan's, because like, you know, when you grew up with places like Discovery Zone, like, you know, and you're short and you're a little kid, those places are heaven and just so much fun and so many activities. But you're watching it now as an adult, like, oh, these are disgusting ass loud, gross germ factories. And watching it now with everything going on, it was like, oh, this is as anxiety ridden as Uncut Gems in its own way.
Why would they let us go there?
You sometimes think about places like Discovery Zone and think certain things come to your mind, like certain senses are brought back up. And I just distinctly remember the smell of shit at all times during those places. we may have had a real dysfunctional Discovery Zone in Amarillo, but that is my distinct memory of those places.
Oh boy.
That sucks. I thankfully never had that experience at a DZ Discovery Zone.
I believe it tracks.
Oh, 100%. No doubt whatsoever. So during the scene, the son... Now, to be fair, we are 47 minutes into the film. 47 minutes into a two-hour movie. And as much as I like this, I enjoy this picture, 2 hours, unconscionable. Crazy length. So the son basically tells Brooklyn Decker, like, oh, like, I'm just upset that my dad, like, because he met you, we had to cancel our trip to Hawaii. And Sandler's like, no, we can go to Hawaii now. And so cut to the airport. Nix Wardson shows up as Dolph Lundgren. He decides to tag along, and he is playing Jennifer Aniston's fiance, and he is doing some sort of Germanic Teutonic accent. And he claims to be a sheep seller. In this scene, we get some great product placement for 17 Magazine. We get some great product placement for Emergency, which we could all use a bit of right now. So they go to Hawaii, and they get to the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, which I guess is owned by Hilton, because when they have to check into their rooms, I guess he didn't book rooms before he got there. Because the only two rooms that are left are, what, $12,000 a night and $8,000 a night? Like he's going to be paying 20 grand a night.
Which Sandler reacts to it as if any of us would realize, like, oh, we're paying like an extra $10 for drinks at this restaurant that we went to tonight. That sucks, but okay, I'll make it work. That's sort of his reaction to it. Like, we are quite firmly, and I guess grownups kind of... tracks here too, and well, and also funny people, but like, we're in definitely like Sandler playing wealthy people, like wealthy characters.
Oh, as
like big time,
for sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, it's like if one of us looked at our credit card and looked at our statement and was like, oh, that ATM took a transaction fee, like, damn, $5, okay, like, you know, that sort of thing. Like, that's about as much as he does say. I liked this bit because earlier when he's shopping for shoes with Jennifer Aniston and they say that the shoes cost $1,700, Sandler says, what are they made out of, panda? And then later on when he's talking to the guy about how expensive the rooms are, he says, what is it made out of, panda? And then he says, I said that before. Like, I was like, okay, I like that you repeated that joke and then immediately acknowledged that you were repeating it. So we get some product placement for the Hilton Honors Reward Program and the Waldorf Astoria.
Which is probably the most significantly strange call out of any. It's just so specific.
Yeah, well, you have to assume that it's a little bit like the resort in Blended, which again, this movie greatly resembles in many ways. It's got to be like that resort in Blended where it's like, this is just like the reason they made the movie is to go to this specific like resort. And of course, part of that quid pro quo is going to be like putting them in the movie. So I have to assume that's why it's like as specific as it is. But so anyways, they go out on the beach. Brooklyn Decker does her best impersonation of Ursula Andress from Dr. No. It's pretty stunning.
Since I didn't see this movie, this was the scene that I recall most in the promotions.
Yep.
Like every trailer had her getting out of the water in this Dr. No type setup.
You know, we keep talking about it because it is like a big part of the issue with the movie, I guess. But like, I could see a version of this movie where Brooklyn Decker's character is, and sorry to put it this way, but if she was like 50% more, like if she was like dumber or greedier, or like it could be like a Heartbreak Kid type situation where Sandler's like realizing that this kind of person isn't right for him, like at the same time. Yeah. Like she seems too fundamentally decent,
yeah,
and intelligent, and good-hearted to really like, I don't know, you almost need it. I kind of appreciate that the movie has like this big heart, but I also think like, well, dramatically it's kind of a dead end here because like she like, cause like right. What you're saying, Austin, where it's like, that was like a main focus of the trailer. And from what I remember from the trailer, it is a little bit like, it's like, oh, like he wants to marry this blonde bimbo, but like, you know, he's got to get Jennifer Aniston involved in it or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know. It's a weird thing.
Yeah.
I do prefer this version of it though. Like, I feel like it's a big saving grace of this 2 hour long and otherwise oftentimes kind of crass movie that her character is so nice and so decent, because I feel like any other movie, honestly, maybe even other Sandler movies would have had her be like a conniving like bitch or just kind of like pathetically dumb or whatever. This movie doesn't go there though, and you sort of expect it to, and I'm glad it doesn't, because it sort of helps smooth over the other crazy edges that that this movie definitely indulges in.
Yeah.
At the very heart of it, if you have the sort of like triangle between Sandler, Aniston, and Decker, these are decent people at least, and that makes everything else like go down a lot easier.
Totally.
Yeah, this, I guess I'll say for one thing, just small, like, side note. So I guess she was the Sports Illustrated, like, swimsuit model, like, the year before this.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, I guess that definitely was the reason why I always figured that they showed that scene.
Yes.
In the trailers. Yeah, and then in terms of, like, her and involvement with this story, the one thing I never understood until watching it now was like, oh wait, Nicole Kidman's in this thing too, is she a love interest? And like thinking that there was going to be like a third party, right, love interest, which obviously, as we're going to get into, doesn't play out. But yeah, her role just never really made sense to me in the context of this movie, and I really thought she was going to be here and there for like 30 minutes, like maybe, mm-hmm, just that bikini scene and like a couple other things.
Yeah,
so I was kind of surprised to see how much she was in it.
Yeah. So then there's a bit where, Brooklyn Decker says something about like, she hopes she looks like Jennifer Aniston at her age. That's when Sandler does the Jill voice talking about Cary Grant. They all go to dinner together. And Brooklyn Decker asks Nick Swardson what he does. And he says he's a sheep shipper. He's into sheep. He says that he sells people sheep online at the website gotprettysheep.com. There is no domain called gotprettysheep.com. I checked. Don't worry. Yeah. If you want to buy it, it's available. And Brooklyn Decker is like, what do they do with the sheep? And Swardson is like, whatever they want. The sky is the limit. And then he talks about how there are sheep fight clubs. And I have a devastating confession to make here, guys. And that confession is, I found Nick Swardson pretty funny in this movie.
I respect the energy he brings to it, because like the motherfucker's committing to this whole thing, which I do appreciate. And you know, as you said, the kind of like getting very used to being in like this Sandler sandbox and you know, Stockholm Syndrome and all that. I'm definitely, you know, sort of grading this movie on a curve, I suppose you'd say, or at least more generously than normal people would. Having said that, or at least on this most recent rewatch, I found the Swartzen stuff to be kind of like patience trying, I will say.
Oh, I hear you. I mean, I understand logically, like I you know, Nick Swartzen, he's never, I don't really have any like animus towards the guy, but I've never really, you know, he's not one of the Sandler squad that I'm particularly enamored of, but I think he's funny in this movie, especially later on. So Aniston sort of wants to cut and run, but what do you know, as Austin alluded to moments ago, Nicole Kidman is there, and Nicole Kidman is playing Devlin, the evil sorority girl that Jennifer Aniston knew and hates and all that stuff. And of course, this sets up this great screwball premise for the movie. I mean, the movie already has a pretty, like, a pretty good setup, but, you know, this sets up that it takes too long to get there, but, you know, this notion, it's a great screwball complication that, like, oh, the fake name that you gave that's highly specific, like, no one has that name. All of a sudden, the person that you that you got that name from is there, and that throws a monkey wrench into the whole thing, and you got to keep Brooklyn Decker away from Nicole Kidman so that she doesn't learn that they have the same name as Jennifer Aniston and blah, blah, blah. But even more importantly, Nicole Kidman is there with her husband or boyfriend, whatever, I'm not sure which it is, who is played by none other than returning Sandler Squad member Dave Matthews.
Hooray.
That's right, of the Dave Matthews Band. Because of Winn-Dixie. He's in that movie too. But yeah, so Dave is playing, what is it, Ian Maxton Johnson? It's Ian Maxton something.
Ian Maxton Jones.
Ian Maxton Jones. Great name. Dave, much like he did in You Don't Mess with the Zohan, Dave commits to this. And he is, as someone who, you know, not as big a fan of Dave Matthews as our previous and hopefully future guest, Danny Benson, but still, what once upon a time was a great fan of the Dave Matthews Band. It's incredibly funny to see Dave Matthews acting in these contexts. And he's good. He's not like, you know, he doesn't embarrass himself. They talk about how Nicole Kidman mentions that Dave invented the iPod. And Sandler has a bit, which again, it seems like a throwaway bit, but it keeps coming back up, where Sandler's like, I invented the barking hand. And they're like, what's the barking hand? And he's just like, rah, 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 like shoves his hand in your face and barks. I mean, like it's a nothing bit.
Yeah, it's a weird joke because it repeats itself a couple times or he does it later to her, to Jennifer Aniston.
Several times. Now, I do briefly want to sidebar about Nicole Kidman, because this is never really like she has, it's an interesting thing in that she's totally game for this. Like she's absolutely like, she's not phoning it in. She is absolutely like giving a performance, but she never made another Adam Sandler movie. And so it's this rare example of, I mean, certainly an actress of her caliber. I mean, she's an Academy Award winner, right?
Yeah.
For The Hours?
She won Actress for The Hours.
Yeah. So Academy Award winning actress who has been known not just as like a box office draw, but as like a prestigious actress. I mean, worked with Kubrick on his last movie. Like, you know, she's been in several major Best Picture nominated movies, like been nominated several times. Like she is, her career, her pedigree sort of speaks for itself. And so I like her being in this. It's a little bit anomalous for her career, but I do like her being in this movie because it seems to me, without hearing her say this exactly, it's just like, it seems like, oh, like even an actress like Nicole Kidman would love to be paid to hang out with Adam Sandler and his friends. It's just like, let's all just go fuck around. Who cares? Like she's not above it.
Absolutely. And I feel like as far as like
inexplicable A-list gets in the Sandler universe. Kidman in this one is only maybe bested by Pacino in the following film. I guess 2011 was just a really good year of like Sandler enjoying these almost kind of like weird flexes in a way. It's like, yeah, no, people want to party with me and we have a good time doing it. And look at these performances I'm getting out of them. Like, they're not phoning it in.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And this is like, I guess, like one of what maybe I, it looks like looking at her filmography, one of two straight up comedies between like this and Bewitched.
Yeah, you're right. And Bewitched, famously very bad movie. I mean, I know no one likes this movie. People don't really like this one either, but like, this is head and shoulders above Bewitched as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, you're right. It is interesting that she's never really done straight up comedy. And I gotta say, she acquits herself well here. Like, she's funny and she gets the spirit of it. She doesn't feel like she's slumming. Nicole Kidman is long, ever since you laugh, and this will show my particular age, but ever since I was 6 years old and I saw Batman Forever in theaters, I was like, ooh, I like her. Like, what's going on with her? And ever since then, you know, Moulin Rouge is one of my top five favorite movies ever made. Like, I think she's a treasure. I love her. And so it is a kind of a delight to see her pop up in this. So anyways, she mentions that her husband, Ian Maxton Jones, right?
Yeah, Jones.
She mentions that he invented the iPod. Now, later we learn that's not true. But everyone, we know that's not true because we know who, the audience knows who Steve Jobs is. So it's a weird thing that they keep referring to Dave Matthews' character as though he were Steve Jobs. Like, it's like, in this universe, does Steve Jobs not exist? Like, why do they, like, later on when he answers the phone and he's like, go for the I-Man, and Sandler has that funny riff where he's just like, oh, is like he's seeing the guy who invented the iPod pick up his iPhone and say, go for the I-Man. It's like watching Dr. Kevorkian kill himself or watching Ronald McDonald eat a cheeseburger off of the Grimace. Like, that's a funny bit. Later on, when you learn that, of course, Dave Matthews did not invent the iPod, I don't understand why that's a shock to anyone. Like, it's one of the many unanswered questions from Just Go With It. So next, I don't know. At this point, it goes kind of squarely into like the blended territory of like they're just hanging out, having like picturesque adventures. So it's like they go on this big island adventure tour, where like, you know, they cross a bridge where like a, you know, one of the planks breaks and Adam Sandler falls and hits his nuts.
That was a really odd. Like, I don't feel like you get him. I don't feel like Adam Sandler often like injures himself in his own comedies.
Right. He doesn't have pratfalls like that a lot for himself.
Yeah. I mean, because right before that, Nick Swartzen gets attacked by a wild boar. And that seems very much so everything we've seen before this. But that one where he just like, where Adam Sandler falls and hits his nuts, I was like, really? You would see it happening to Nick Swartzen, not to Adam Sandler.
Yes, and you could totally see it happening to either Kevin James or Rob Schneider in one of their vehicles. Mm-hmm. But you're right, Sandler doesn't really have that persona at this point, if he ever did. I guess I don't think he really did. There's also a bit here where the young girl, Kiki, gets thrown in the mud. He throws her in the mud, and she gets up. And she's like covered in mud. And when she goes to jump in the waterfall in the water, Adam Sandler calls her Al Jolson, which is like a reference to blackface in The Jazz Singer. It's a funny line. I have to wonder how much of the intended audience got it. It's a little bit like when I saw Superbad in theaters the day that it opened in Auburn, Alabama, and when they made the joke about Orson Welles eating his fat ass to death, I laughed out loud, and no one else in my theater laughed, and I was like, oh, they don't know who Orson Welles is. Like, okay. But anyways, there's this beautiful waterfall because it's Hawaii. Brooklyn Decker jumps in. They learned that Jennifer Aniston's son cannot swim. And they have a funny conversation about that, where it's like, so your whole thing was you wanted to swim with dolphins, but you can't swim. And the kid's like, I didn't think it through. And then Jennifer Aniston strips to a bikini and jumps in the water. And her son is like, and Adam Sandler is like, wow, maybe I should listen to her about Cary Grant. And the son says, don't listen to her. She takes spin classes like they're M&Ms, which was a line that made me laugh. Sandler that night, Sandler and Brooklyn Decker have the kids for that night. Basically, is that the moment where is that where like the kids, I think that's where the son says the thing about like, oh, like I, the one thing that makes me sad is when my dad doesn't have time for me. So let's see. Kidman's at this outdoor like beach bar, you know, having drinks, drowning her sorrows. And Nicole Kidman walks up and starts talking to her. And Kidman admits, she's like, you know, that guy, I'm not actually married to Danny. He's off at his wedding. We like made this whole thing up. I'm probably in love with him, but it doesn't really matter right now. And then Nicole Kidman comes clean about how she's just like, oh, well, I'm breaking up with Ian, I'm breaking up with Dave Matthews, and it's because, and Jennifer Aniston's like, why? And she's like, well, it's because he's gay. And we see that because Dave Matthews is talking to a table full of sailors and squeezing their arms, and then doing like this crazy fake hula song where he's singing like, like that sort of thing. And then we learn from Nicole Kidman that he didn't invent the iPod, shock of shocks. But more than that, we learn that the way he made his money is by suing the Dodgers because I guess a ball hit him. And it's reminiscent, for our purposes of this podcast, it's reminiscent of Adam Sandler not having to work because of being hit by a cab in Big Daddy.
But also, quick side note, if you have access to the Just Go With It DVD, you know, God Love Physical Media, there's like, you know, a blooper reel, just like there is on plenty of Sandler movies. And there's a great bit when you sort of have like a talking head with Dave Matthews, and he does a Sandler. He does an impressionation of Sandler feeding him lines during that whole scene where he's like feeling out the sailors and stuff. Like, okay, Dave Buddy, okay, go now say this instead, Dave Buddy. It's Matthews doing Sandler, and a very good Sandler and well worth your time. So please check that out.
That's awesome. Yeah, I definitely will. So then all of a sudden, Sandler is there, and he's overheard some of the stuff that Aniston has been saying, and he's just like, you know, is it true that you think that about me? They have this scene together, which once again, you know, we keep returning to this, but it's just like the scene between him and Aniston. It's like all of a sudden you've been watching When Harry Met Sally, like a romantic comedy that's been doing the work, because like, yeah. Sandler and Aniston together, out of nowhere, managed to make this scene so good and sweet and kind of beautiful in a way where he's like, oh, like I realized when I was standing up there with Brooklyn Decker, like I realized that she's great, but the only problem with her is that she's not you. And like managed to sell that romantic comedy boilerplate like very, very well. And he's just like, and she's like, oh, well, like, do you mind my kids? Like, you can't just kill them off in a fake accident. And he's just like, I love those kids. I want to spend 23 hours a day with them. And they kiss, and it's really beautiful. And it is weird that the movie doesn't even give us the scene of the Brooklyn Decker storyline ending. Now, I know that she's still in the movie for one more shot basically, but
yeah,
it is weird, and I think it plays into our issue with Brooklyn Decker's role as written just in general in this movie, where it's like, oh, the movie is so uninvested in like making you think that she is a viable option for him. that it doesn't even give you that scene where he's like, I can't marry you. And it's like, would that be devastating to her? Or was she seems to be taking everything in stride on a scene by scene basis here. Yeah.
I think she'll make it out okay.
Well, that, yeah. And they, I mean, it's certainly, and I don't, and like, there's a part of me that, because that scene would be so boilerplate between him and Brooklyn Decker, there's a part of me that is actually like, doesn't mind at all that they don't show it. But it is still just like a weird, like, okay, like, you know, there's like, you kind of just drop the ball, like wrapping up a major storyline in your film. Also, the sailors in this scene are drinking Bud Light, having product placement there. So Sandler's narration comes back and he talks about, you know, the kid, the son, Aniston's son got to swim with dolphins. We see Brooklyn Decker on a plane back home from Hawaii, and what do you know, she meets Andy Roddick, who is her real life husband, tennis superstar Andy Roddick. She meets him and they sort of have like a clearly they're gonna like fall in love together. And then we have this nice scene where Sandler has gotten married to Aniston. And she's like, you know, would you like to dance with your wife, Dr. Maccabee? And they go out on the dance floor. And what do you know? That random joke that you thought was like a tossed off bit early in the movie comes back, because who do we see in damn near the last shot of the movie? But the soul patched guy who Jennifer Aniston went on a date with, who is a bass player at the wedding. And he's played by none other than Sandler Squad member Alan Covert.
Oh, beautiful.
And we go to credits basically on that. And that is Dennis Dugan's Just Go With It. So, Austin, I'm curious. You had not seen this movie until tonight. What did you think?
I actually really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I think I had just written it off for so many years as like, just looks like garbage. So I was kind of surprised by the romantic story element that I felt like, the Jennifer Aniston stuff worked. Yeah. And there were enough moments in it that were enjoyable for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I walk away from it. And then because prior to this, there had been a lot of discussion in our leading into the podcast talking about this film, and like that it would be a screwball, or that it was very screwball-esque, and like just like that kind of discovery and playing through that with me, I was like, oh yeah, this is kind of like a throwback. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very fun. I did think it was long, and I think we're entering into the every Adam Sandler movie is 2 hours long period, right? I think everything from here on out is going to be about that long.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, Jack and Jill's like 90 minutes. That's a short movie, but
oh, is it?
Yeah. Otherwise I think they get kind of loaded. You know, I think this movie is, it is the kind of thing where, kind of similar to Murder Mystery, it's the kind of thing where the premise of the movie would be the premise of the movie plus Sandler and Aniston together. Like, there's a version of it you can envision that would be like an all-timer comedy, like a genuinely great film. And in neither case does it live up to that potential. But I still think that, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, obviously our part of our podcast is we are sort of reclaiming or rediscovering things that were dismissed and like things that people overlooked. But that is a thing. It is a thing with this movie where it's like, well, the fact, like, how can you, even if you think all of it is so stupid and moronic, it's like Aniston and Sandler are so good together, and there are better movies than this where the co-stars don't have this kind of repartee. They don't have this kind of connection to one another. And I've seen it twice now. I find this movie incredibly watchable. A fun fact about this movie, I've mentioned before on this podcast that my mother her favorite movie ever is Blended.
Yes.
But she also, and it's funny because they're very similar movies, she loves this movie too. And she told me recently, when I told her, I said to her, I was just like, well, your favorite movie is Blended. And she's like, oh, well, it might be Just Go With It. And I was like, really? And she's like, I don't know which one. Like, every day I have a different answer. Like, it's either Blended or Just Go With It. And I'm just like, okay, great. When I told her today that this was the episode that we were recording tonight, she was so excited. She was like, oh my God, that makes me so happy that you're all going to be watching that. Not dissimilar to Grown Ups last week. I had seen this movie in the past year, basically. Unlike Grown Ups, I had watched Just Go With It within the last year prior to revisiting it. But kind of similar to what we were saying about Grown Ups, in the midst of what we are all going through, in the midst of all this uncertainty and everything else, watching this movie and actually giving my full attention to it, even when it wasn't great, or even when there were things that I would have done differently, I found it very, very enjoyable the whole time. It was a very like, oh, I'm just going to hang out with my buddy Adam Sandler for a while. And like, he's got his friends who clearly all love being with him. And we're just going to watch this low stakes, low drama, comedy, and we're just going to forget our troubles. And I so distrust the mentality of, I don't usually love the mentality of like, just turn off your brain and enjoy something. And that's not what I'm saying here. Like, oh, just like, forget about standard, just turn off your brain, do whatever. It's more specific or targeted than that. It's just that like, it's almost like what PTA, what Paul Thomas Anderson said about like Happy Gilmore, mm-hmm. when he was talking about why he cast Sandler in Punch Drunk Love, where he was just like, look, like I love Magnolia. I'm really proud of it. But if I'm like alone and sad on a Saturday night, I'm not going to put on Magnolia. I'm going to put on Happy Gilmore.
Right.
And that's kind of how I feel about this movie, where I'm just like, look, like this was a godsend watching it today. I need to like forget about all this stuff and spend time with all my pals, and like get to talk about it later with my actual in real life pals. Like, this is great. Like,
absolutely. No, revisiting this, I definitely had the same like positive vibes as I did the first time I saw it, which was such a pleasant surprise. I think in a way, weirdly or stupidly, this movie benefits from its god awful reputation. Because mm-hmm. you sit down and you watch and you're like, oh, well, wow, like, look how great he is with Aniston and all that. Like, I think at worst, this movie is like dreadfully overlong. It has no business being 2 hours. And I think if you trim 15 to 30 minutes, you have what could be like an all-timer Sandler movie. As it is, the worst thing I'll say about it is that it doesn't need to be 2 hours. I really appreciate Nick Swardson's energy in this movie, but I find his character to be a bit much to handle, but that's okay. It's not a deal breaker. I love how committed Kidman and Dave Matthews are. I really enjoy, and yeah, even more so than Blended, and I'm on record as being right there with your mother as loving Blended, but I even like Sandler with the kids in this more than Blended.
The kids in this are better than the kids in Blended.
Yeah, we skipped over it earlier, but during the now beloved Pizza Hut scene, when Sandler's sort of like negotiating all the terms with the kids, there's a bit where it's like, well, like, oh, so like the son wants to like, oh, well, let's all have a play date at like McFunnigan's or whatever it's called. Gosh. And then Sandler basically like, he says something like, it's not Chuck E. Cheese, but it's sort of like a generic restaurant that sounds like Chuck E. Cheese. Like, all right, well, what if we went to Chuck E. Cheese instead? Because it's just down the street from my office. And then the son says something like, if you mention that slot bucket again, I'm walking or something.
Yeah, that's a good line.
I like him. There's some great stuff with him. I love the little burgeoning theater kid and the daughter. There's a lot of fun stuff there. Obviously, we can't speak highly enough about Sandler and Aniston. I enjoy sort of the caustic back and forth. There's an early bit with them when they're it's the old lady who comes into the office and like one boob has like like has lost his like boo job. And, yeah, and so it's a whole scene of them like prepping to, I guess, like fix, like to do some like restorative surgery on her. And so it's like them scrubbing in, putting on gloves, and like going back and forth and talking about the whole Brooklyn, like Brooklyn Decker thing while they're getting ready for surgery. And it's like, it's like a long, very like wordy, dialogue heavy scene. And it's just them patter, patter, patter. And it's so much fun to watch. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a. I think that Jennifer Aniston, when she whatever award, I know we mentioned it in whichever episode it came up in, but when she won something or presented something at an awards ceremony like early this year, and she like shouted out Adam Sandler, and she was just like, "Your magic is real. You know, you're great." It's like, you know, it's people in general, and she specifically clearly loved working with him.
Yes.
And I think the nicest or the most that I can say about this movie, and it's no small thing, it's actually quite a big thing, is that comes through.
Yes.
In this movie. And it's like, oh, you can understand absolutely no snark or cynicism or bullshit about this getting like bad Rotten Tomatoes score or Razzie nominations or whatever. It's like, that is so palpable watching this movie. And that goes now, like not just because of the situation we're in, but just as I get older and you know, my tastes in film sort of evolve and settle and do other things. It's like, that goes so much further for me than it used to, where it's just like, oh, that's so nice that it seems like you enjoy each other's company and you work well together. And like, you know, it's like, even if the material isn't A-list, it's just like, you guys absolutely are. It's special. The movie isn't a masterpiece, but it's, I until proven otherwise, it's always going to be a delight to watch Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston bicker back and forth.
Absolutely. I hope there's more to come, really.
Oh yeah, I mean, hopefully, and Murder Mystery 2 is our best bet for that. But Sandler is not he'll do it. I think. I mean, Netflix ain't gonna stop making movies with him. but if that's all our comments on the movie proper, I guess we should just go ahead and hit our categories that we always do. So we'll start with product placement, and as always, you guys help me out if I missed anything in my notes. I have got Budweiser, I've got Stella Artois, I have got IHOP, I have got Pizza Hut.
Oh yeah.
I have got Pepsi, I have got PlayStation 3, I have got 17 Magazine, I have got Emergency, I've got the Hilton Honors Reward Program and the Waldorf Astoria, I have got... let's see, Heineken, and I have got Bud Light, and I think that's all that I wrote. The only edge cases that I can think of are like NSYNC. That's not really a brand, although it depends on your definition, I suppose. We'll say no.
Yeah. I think that's just Brooklyn Decker's character having good taste in music. So that's fine.
Absolutely. So there's that. And I guess Apple products with iPod and stuff. But,
oh, sure.
Yeah.
And then we, of course, after that, we have our Sandler squad. And the number of Sandler squad that I counted, or the members that I counted, are as follows. We've got Jackie Sandler. We've got Jonathan Loughran. We've got Peter Dante. We've got Jennifer Aniston herself. We've got Rachel Dratch. Kevin Nealon. Dan Patrick. Let's see. Did I say Dave Matthews?
Dave Matthews.
Did I say Nick Swardson officially?
Not yet.
Okay, so Nick Swardson. And we have...
Alan Covert,
right at the last second, and I think that's it, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, Leighton Meester never comes back. Nicole Kidman never comes back. I mean, they could at some point, but they haven't yet. I think that's it, right? Oh, sorry, product placement. I forgot to mention Pop-Tarts.
Oh, right.
Is that Austin? Is that it for Sandler Squad?
I think so. Like, I don't think Keegan-Michael Key ever shows back up again.
No, he does not.
Yeah, I think that's gotta be it.
Yeah. I think that's right. And so then our last category, and it's always a fun, it's always a funny category because we're always like, even this far into the podcast, we're always sort of like trying to like nail down the definition. But I do think that in this instance, I do think that Brooklyn Decker, you wouldn't have guessed this from the trailers 9 years ago. I think Brooklyn Decker is the slumming love interest here because it's just like, not only is the film not giving you enough information as to why she would fall for this guy, because it's not positing that her motivation is money or security. It's like she's supposed to like be genuinely loving this guy, but that's not really an evidence why that would be the case. And the fact that she seems like she's a good actress, you know, she's not just a model, like she does give a good performance in this movie. And it's like, oh, like I don't know, it's the kind, it's similar to like, it's similar to the other slumming love interests we've had where it's just like, I just don't buy this. Like, I know it has to happen for the plot or the setting or whatever. Right. But I just don't understand why. Like, there is a world in which I can imagine Brooklyn Decker being into or infatuated with Adam Sandler, but they didn't quite do that here. Like, they didn't lay that groundwork. So I think Brooklyn Decker, I mean, what do you agree that she's slumming love interest?
I agree. Like, I guess the only distinction is like, I don't think like Brooklyn Decker, the actress, isn't slumming, but her character certainly is.
Yes.
Like, because if nothing else, it seems like Brooklyn's having a good time. She has a really good rapport with like the kids and her co-actresses. She has a good rapport with Sandler. It's just her character can never, unfortunately, doesn't really ever, to me, get past the just the notion of like a plot contrivance. It just doesn't, like, it's almost kind of like a dead on arrival character, unfortunately, that the movie doesn't really feel interested in doing the work for.
Right.
But it's not a deal breaker, and at least they got someone who's just, you know, effortlessly like charming and winning and all that. So I'm glad that it's her in the role. It's just, there's just unfortunately not much for her to work with.
Right. But,
that's not the first or last time that's been the case with some of these movies, but she at least like you at least come away from this movie being like, oh, well, she's really cool though. Like, I like her, but
yeah.
Her role, like, you know, like, it's too bad that her, you know, Palmer is just kind of a, there's not much there, but you know, at least she's having fun.
You know, it's also kind of briefly, it's also kind of nice. I just realized as you were talking that no one in this movie gets like, no one in this movie gets any kind of like comeuppance or any kind of like, it's not any kind of like, oh, well, like, you know, because if she had been like a jerk or like someone who's just in it for the money or whatever, you could see like a, like the way that Adam Sandler's fiance and Wedding Singer is treated, where it's like, oh, this person is like beneath contempt or whatever. Like,
right.
But like, even Nicole Kidman, even Dave Matthews, like, there's none of that in this movie. It's all like pretty positive. Like, every, you know, it's kind of big hearted to everybody.
For sure.
Do you think that she's slumming love interest, Austin?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's as evidenced by everything that happens at the beginning, where I was like kind of questioning, like, why is she going along with this whole thing?
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, I think there's probably many, many people that have had like a one night stand like they had, and then they find out the person's lying, and it's like all cards are off, where it's like, nah, nope, not doing this. And it's like, she's just kind of like, I'll just go with it, essentially.
That's right.
So, yeah. I mean, I think so. Yeah.
That's all. Yeah. I will mention briefly, because we talked about how this is Sandler's last unqualified smash hit in theaters as like a Happy Madison movie. It got bad reviews. It did very, very, very well at the box office. It won. It says here that it won 2 Golden Raspberries for Worst Actor and Director, but I'm pretty sure Dennis Dugan shared Worst Director that year for this and Jack and Jill. because I've always known that, like, Jack and Jill is like, it's like the first movie to like sweep the Razzies, like the movie that won like every Razzie was nominated for. But it also, this film won, it did win a pretty prominent prize, which is at the Nickelodeon Teen Choice Awards. This movie won the chemistry prize for Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston. So the teens, of course, pure as always, they knew what was up. They could see a good thing when it was staring them in the face.
Absolutely. Good on them. It's not the first or last time Nickelodeon had a jump on all of us.
Absolutely.
It looks like Adam Sandler also won for both films. Because The Just Go With It page seems like if you go to the awards, it's like Just Go With It won a Razzie for Jack and Jill, and it's kind of confusing. So I'm guessing he won for both and it's Dugan.
It says here on the Wikipedia page, it says worst actor and worst director for Adam Sandler and Dennis Dugan, respectively. In parentheses on those entries, it says also for Jack and Jill.
Well, as we all know, the Razzies are bullshit, and they often award Razzies to beautiful movies. So whatever, absolutely, pay them no mind.
So that is it for our discussion on Just Go With It. So happy to watch this movie and talk about it with you guys. So happy that we are finally, y'all, anyone out there listening to this, I'm so excited for our next movie. It's Jack and Jill is our next film, and if you haven't seen it, you've probably heard a lot about it. Forget everything you've heard, forget everything you know about Jack and Jill. That's going to be a really special episode. That was a big Jack and Jill has a very special place in my heart. It was a big part of why I wanted to be a part of this podcast. And we have a lot of great stories about that movie. And I think that that episode is going to be really special. We have some fun things planned for that one that if everything goes according to plan, it'll be more ambitious than other of our episodes. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Same here. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be great. So, but be on the lookout for that. Once again, I hope everyone out there is staying safe and healthy and sane in these crazy times. Great to connect with all of you through the power of the Sandman during this unprecedented time. Thank you so much for listening. And with that, I will sign off. I am Wilson Smith.
This is Chris Giles.
And Austin Culp.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will be with you next time for Jack and Jill.
Hooray.